Are you enjoying this podcast? Well, you have KUOW members to thank for that. KUOW members make the trusted local journalism and storytelling you hear on this show possible. Become a member today and help support the production of this podcast. It only takes a minute. Make a donation at KUOW.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks.
Hey, welcome to Friday. Welcome to KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. A privately funded surprise fireworks display hours after sunset and months after Independence Day. Scandal or adventure? We'll talk about that a little bit later on the show. My panel, Seattle Times climate environment reporter Amanda Zoe, is now relaxed enough to join us even after the fireworks. You're doing much better.
I've recovered.
You've recovered.
Quite well.
Yes. Jane, you also go back to sleep.
Somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Freelance science journalist Jane C. Hu. Not in town for the fireworks was independent health journalist Joanne Silberner. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
So we will talk pyrotechnics later in the show. And you can, in fact, you can watch the sparks fly because we stream this show on YouTube and Facebook. Just search KUOW Public Radio. But we've got other news of the week to first discuss and digest. First of all, this week, Seattle government passed and signed a new law that makes having or publicly using illicit drugs a gross misdemeanor in the city. And that means the city can prosecute those crimes. The city attorney can. KUOW reporter Amy Radel told us that Mayor Bruce Harrell is preparing guidance for police on when to make arrests and when to divert people to treatment and other services.
Seattle's ordinance emphasizes that police should make arrests only if the person using drugs also poses a threat to others. City Attorney Ann Davison says she's relieved that the law was passed.
We really do need to be intervening with people in a meaningful way in making our public spaces safer, so I'm glad we can proceed on that.
Davison says her office will look at the cases that are referred by police to see if there are further opportunities to help people seek treatment.
KUOW reporter Joshua McNichols brought us some people's reactions to the new drug law.
Blair Johnson works at a sports bar near Cal Anderson Park. He says law enforcement can help address the opioid crisis.
A lot of people say that's the best rehab is being locked up.
Because drugs are less accessible there. But others say the new law is punishing people instead of helping them.
Basically, it's scapegoating on the part of the city.
Carly McIntosh is currently unhoused. She says a better way is to provide safe places for people to use drugs out of the public eye.
When you're on a drug, if you're not safe in a safe place with safe people, you can get really hurt.
The mayor says this new law should go into effect next month. Here's a little more of Joshua's reporting, collecting some reactions to the law.
Eddie Helton lives on Capitol Hill. He's in favor of the law.
It's time that they started really doing something about the problem because it's way out of control. People smoke that heroin all the time out that foil. I see that all the time.
But not everybody's convinced the law will help. James Lovell works for the Chief Seattle Club. He's worried about what it means for his brother, who lives in shelters and has struggled with addiction for decades.
Is this the thing that's going to finally get my brother clean? Or is this the thing that's going to finally make him on the wrong side of a bullet?
He says right now he has no idea.
So that's some reaction to the law just passed this week by the city of Seattle, making it a gross misdemeanor to use publicly or to possess drugs in the city, illegal drugs. So who is, Amanda, are you clear on who's actually going to get arrested and prosecuted and counseled and treated?
Yeah, it's really not clear because it seems like the city council members really were in a bind with the exact language of when you can make an arrest. And, you know, and even if we make an arrest, we're going to prioritize diversion. But it's all sort of unclear given that I think the court has also said that they're going to try to prioritize high level dealers opposed to, you know, daily street use. So I think the actual impacts of what this ordinance is going to do is still very unclear.
And the point people in this are the police. And I don't care what kind of guidance you give them. They're going to be out there. They know that, you know, they're under the gun, so to speak. They know that people have been highly critical of them, and sometimes for good reason. And there's no right decision in a lot of these cases. You know, you'll have a storekeeper or somebody who lives downtown saying, hey, you got to do something about this. And and you want to get the person into diversion, and they don't want to go. And it's just going to be a mess.
What does it mean for someone to be a danger? I mean, it feels like that is really slippery and very subjective. Seems like we might get a little bit of guidance from the mayor about enforcement later on. Mm-hmm. But as it stands, it feels highly subjective.
And do we have the infrastructure? You know, great. You know, we want to get these people into other, give these people other options. Are there other options out there? I don't think so.
Right. And we're waiting to learn more about what the budget is for these services, because the mayor is producing his new budget, I think, in the next few weeks. And by the way, there's a budget deficit in the city of Seattle.
Yeah, this all kind of feels like potentially a Band-Aid until we have some longer-term solutions to fix the root of the problem, which is addiction.
Mm-hmm. And it's huge. Yeah. And I don't know why it's hitting Seattle harder than anywhere else. In the ordinance itself, it cites a statistic I wasn't familiar with, which is that we have, or Washington State has had the highest increase of overdose deaths in the country over the past year. And we're up 24% in deaths.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
And that's statewide, and also how we track these things may vary from state to state, but we know there's a problem. Just anecdotally, I talked to someone I haven't talked to in years, and her nephew, who I used to play with when he was a little boy, he's gone.
Oh, boy.
He was I think he was using Adderall, and it turned out it was laced with fentanyl. That's, you know, I'm just one of a million anecdotes, right?
Well, Nick Kristoff, the New York Times reporter, or editorial writer, I think he's just written a book, or he's certainly written enough columns about his school bus. He grew up in rural Oregon on a farm. His school bus, one-third, I think that's about the number, one-third are, you know, either died or, you know, sort of lost to addiction.
Right. Well, this week, Mayor Harrell also said that the city is going to kick in another $6 million a year on this new team of behavioral health professionals to respond to public safety calls. Now, whether when drug use is a public safety question, as you asked, Jane, that's hard to say. What if the drug use seems to have something to do with, quote unquote, street disorder? Is that a threat to public safety? It's just, as I opened with the beginning, I was asking you, Amanda, do you have the answers? Because I feel like I can't give listeners, I have far more questions than I do answers.
I certainly do not have the answers, Bill.
Yeah. Well, this drug law takes effect in 4 weeks from now, a month from its passage this week. Also this week, by the way, you're listening to KUOW's Week in Review. This week, a man with a sledgehammer broke 9 windows at the Wing Luke Museum in Chinatown International District. He allegedly told police, quote, the Chinese had been torturing him for years. He's been charged with a hate crime. And there was an op-ed in the Seattle Times, Amanda, your newspaper, that linked the Wing Luke crime to recent home invasion robberies against Asian Americans in South Seattle, and with a Seattle police officer laughing as he discussed the killing of an Indian grad student in a crosswalk by a speeding officer. The authors asked elected officials to, quote, keep our Asian community safe. What is being proposed and asked for from the city? I mean, I get some sense. From reading it, they talked about safety training for our community members in several Asian languages. The authors, by the way, the chair of the Beacon Hill Council, who's a Philippine immigrant, a UW American Ethnic Studies professor who came here from Hong Kong, local Japanese American Citizens League co-president. And they talked about not having enough political power, you know, being always overlooked, and also said that the safest areas of Seattle are those with the greatest resources, not those with the greatest police presence, and called for more to be done to increase resources in South Seattle and the CID. It's just that it, you know, this feels like we've been having this discussion for so long, and we were talking before the show started, just yet another on the pile. The Stranger is reporting today, and I haven't had a chance to look into it, but the Stranger is reporting on this audio recording of a Seattle police officer using a racial slur against a neighbor in an argument. So I'm just wondering what we can tell listeners about what's being proposed, what's being done, what's not being done.
Bill, when you asked what are they calling for, the first thing that came to mind for me was just respect.
Same here. Mm.
A very baseline level of respect. And I think for a long time, Asian Americans have, well, not to get too in the weeds on it, but Asia is a very large place, and there are a lot of smaller subcommunities of Asian Americans. And I think it has taken, you know, many decades for people to try and figure out what that identity means to each of those communities, how we fit together, what we have in common, what we don't have in common. But as we're seeing in all of these different events over the last few weeks here, it feels like there's just a baseline level of disrespect or a lack of attention being paid to some of these crimes that seem like they are rooted in bias.
And it seems geographical. I mean, it seems like the International District is especially in need and especially ignored.
Yeah, and it seems like each one of these examples that we're discussing, whether it's this hate crime vandalism or, you know, those targeted robberies, they all, when you think about them in isolation, they have like individual like policy solutions to them or like individual causes. But I think to this community, it's sort of like, well, we're not being listened to. You're not responding to our 911 calls. And then also like when you think we're not around, you're saying these things to us. And I think the element of respect is really dead on here, which is that they feel like the police isn't, you know, doing their job and also not respecting them.
Yeah, in the case of the Wing Museum, it took police 45 minutes to show up after telling museum staff they couldn't respond to vandalism reports and to stop calling 911. SPD said, Seattle Police Department said, they were short-staffed that night. It was the night of the Beyonce concert. there were these 14, in case listeners haven't heard, home invasion robberies, 14 that I know of reported. All targeting Asians and Asian Americans. Seattle Police Lieutenant John O'Neill told King 5 that these invasions are not necessarily racially motivated.
This is not a hate crime. This is people that are trying to attack our vulnerable adults in our community.
I'm shocked. I'm concerned. I'm angry.
Seattle City Council candidate Tanya Wu agrees it's not a hate crime.
Tanya Wu is a community activist in the CID, Chinatown International District, and she said she thinks these robbers have been targeting Asian Americans because, quote, some Chinese families don't believe in banks. They keep all cash in the home. It's a crime of opportunity, not hate or bias.
Yeah, I had a kind of a hard time with that phrasing because, you know, I understand it might not fall to like the legal definition or the police definition of a hate crime, but if like there's a series of crimes and they're disproportionately impacting a specific ethnic group, then it doesn't really matter what the definition is. That's going to be taken as racism and hate.
And the idea that she's giving a reason, I remember back a while back where people were advising women not to wear provocative clothing if they didn't want to be attacked. And it's, you know what, if people want to keep money in the house, they can keep, you know, why are we saying, no, you can't keep money in the house? You know, it's because in her case, and I'm not Asian, so maybe I shouldn't be talking about this, but I felt so uncomfortable when I read her comments saying, you know, suggesting to people, you know, you're making yourself a victim. I don't feel that way.
Joanne, I'm totally with you on that. I am Chinese, and Chinese people are not a monolith, it turns out. But I did not like that phrasing because it felt like there's a little bit of victim blaming there to say that certain people were not educated enough about how to keep their money in the right way to avoid being victims of a crime. But yeah, I mean, I think that a hate crime doesn't, well, there's a very specific definition of what is a hate crime in order to be prosecutable. But bias does not mean that this person is out there necessarily saying that what motivates their crime is specifically race, but bias can still be shown in a systemic way through who they're targeting and for what reason and what their beliefs are about these people and what they may or may not have in their house.
And what they probably know the police are not going to do. And they're not going to show for vandalism, you know, who knows if they'll show for a house invasion.
I remember reading in an article about the Wing Luke that, right, it took a while for SVD to respond, but that also someone at the museum had emailed the mayor. And lo and behold, a few minutes later, that is when the police showed up. So I thought that was an interesting detail.
Mm-hmm. He's responsive, I guess.
Well, King County is considering a community-based hotline for reporting hate crimes, a hotline that's an alternative to calling the police, because some people say they don't feel safe or they don't feel comfortable, culturally comfortable, calling the police about hate crimes. And one more item to add to this before we take a break here, since we're talking about policing, I want to give you an update on that body cam video that I mentioned very briefly. It came out last week. The Seattle Officers Union vice president was laughing as he told the union president about a woman who just had been killed in a crosswalk by a speeding officer. Well, a California news organization is reporting that after that conversation got recorded, the union president asked the police chief to cancel a contract for a software program that analyzes what officers say on body camera footage. Apparently, a similar thing happened in Vallejo, California. That's why the news site is following this. So on this call that I mentioned, accidentally recorded on the officer's body cam, the Seattle Union vice president told his boss, quote, "She is dead." And this software program automatically scans body camera recordings for red flag words, including dead, because it's looking for high stakes interactions to make sure cops are handling those well. And so obviously they're talking about death. That's high stakes. And we don't know whether this software notified leadership automatically, you know, sent them a note about the word dead in this conversation and sent them a recording. But the union president, Mike Solon, told the Seattle pro-cop radio station KTTH that the department did not tell officers that they were being, quote, spied on like this, that he was irate, and the Seattle Police Department canceled its agreement with this software company, Trulio, in February, which, Amanda, you astutely found out. It's not like that hasn't been reported, that this this cancellation happened in February. I didn't remember the details.
Yeah, it seems like they the Seattle Police Department had a pilot program with this company, and then Axios Seattle reported in February. Of course, this is without the context of the body cam footage and what the officer said, but they reported that they ended the pilot and weren't continuing. It's sort of unclear to me to what degree this software played a role in, you know, the controversy that we have at hand now, because I guess the police union, they've said that the officer sort of self-reported his comments. So I don't know if it was that the software like flagged it specifically, or if it was just sort of like another thing that was listening to this officer talk.
Is that body cam footage available? Like, if you ask the police department, gee, I'd like to see the body cam footage from a particular encounter. I for some reason, I recall that is available if you know to ask, but I'm not sure.
I believe it's subject to public records law.
That's right.
Right. And the police department had told this California news site that, as Amanda said, this was a limited pilot program. They discontinued it in light of reactions to news coverage. And they referenced some news articles reporting that the ACLU of Washington was concerned about a threat to civilian privacy. I'm a little unclear on which threat they're talking about. I mean, body cams can be invasive. I'm not sure if they're specifically talking about this software, you know, recording analysis. But in any case, also the police department, although the officer, the vice president of the union, said, "I flagged this as soon as I realized what happened," the police department says that leadership found out because a department employee discovered the video in the, quote, routine course of business and brought their concerns up the chain of command. So the Office of Police Accountability is investigating that. And one more thing to leave you with, as we'll find out more about this, but when the police chief, Adrian Diaz, back when he was a finalist for the job, this is about a year ago, he told the Seattle Channel that this technology, this software, was a game changer in SPD being able to learn about problematic interactions. He talked about three ways the department would build a system of equity, accountability, and equality.
And then the third component is actually our quality data, which is really taking and analyzing our body cameras and being able to capture the voices and see if there is anything that we're escalating or de-escalating in a situation to really enhance our customer service. So these are game changers to how we're actually doing policing and how we're changing culture.
So that pilot program with the software company is canceled, and we'll find out more about it and see where this investigation goes of the interaction with this officer. Okay, it's time we take a break. That's just the beginning of some of this week's developments, and we are on KOW's Week in Review, covering this for you, explaining for you, with the Seattle Times' Amanda Zoe, freelance science journalist Jane C. Hu, and independent health journalist Joanne Silberner, and we'll be right back.
This podcast is free, and it's accessible to everyone thanks to support from listeners like you. If you value this show, please consider supporting its production by donating to our home, KUOW. It only takes a minute to give, and you'll be helping to support the production of this podcast. Make a donation at kuow.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks!
I'm your host of Week in Review, Bill Radke. So every week, you know, we choose a few topics that all four of us want to discuss. But then I also do a quicker rundown of some events that we're not going to dive all the way into. But one is First Lady Jill Biden in town, raising money and promoting the White House's Cancer Moonshot Initiative. And health reporter Joanne Silberner, what is the Cancer Moonshot, and why is that relevant in Seattle?
Well, this was one of Biden's early initiatives. You know, he's lost people in his family to cancer. It really means a lot to him, and he's putting a lot of money into it. Speaking of money, that's probably part of the reason Jill Biden is here. You know, she's going over to Medina, I think, and
Mercer Island.
Oh, yeah, and Shoreline, mm-hmm. I think. To go to some fundraisers. But, you know, we are a hotbed of cancer research. We've got the Hutch. Oh, and she's going to the Hutch, of course. So she's going to the Hutch. We've got University of Washington. We've got all the biotech companies that are involved in cancer. It's a really good place to go to find people interested in being involved in this.
Speaking of health, can I ask you something else? If you're gonna get the new COVID booster, I'm asking for a friend. Do you want it? Who could be 58 years old? Do you want this booster as soon as possible, or do you want it closer to a possible wintertime COVID surge? Any opinion?
Opinion, yes. Comfort level, very low.
Okay.
You know, the CDC is saying, yes, if you're over five, you should get they're calling it the 2023-2024 vaccine, and they're behind it. And boy, it used to be, you know, for decades, if the CDC said it, they go through an enormous process to get to that point of making a recommendation like this. Various committees, they really were careful about it. It's become so politicized. It really has. And the issue with boosters is what people know the boosters will do is they'll raise your antibody levels for a few weeks or months. And that's great. But then that first reaction to the booster or to a vaccine goes away. And then you've got your secondary reaction, which is your long-term reaction. It's actually a different arm of the immune system. And there are people who I respect, scientists like Paul Offit, who are saying, you know what, unless you're in a risk group, you know, immunocompromised around older people, if you're not in a risk group, you will get a little bit of a boost, but maybe you don't really have to. So where do you go with that? I mean, mm-hmm. I'm over 65. I'm going to get it. Am I rushing? No. In fact, right now, there's a little bit of a shortage. The Seattle King County Public Health Department is going along with what the CDC says, and they do notice that there is a bit of a lag. Some of the supplies are coming in now.
My appointment is October 30th, but I'm kind of looking around. I want to drive to a red county.
Wait, how did you get an appointment? I feel like I've been trying to get an appointment for weeks, and Kaiser for a while was saying that it was only for immunocompromised people. I feel like the messaging, the last few years, the messaging has been confusing, to say the least. But
I got an email through the because I'm a state employee, and So I got an email. October 30th, though, that felt like so far away.
Yeah,
that,
if you go to Rite Aid's website now, the first appointment's October 21st. Yeah. So, but my husband, on the other hand, made an appointment a couple of weeks ago and got an appointment in a week or two. So
I'll just go with him.
We're waiting for the second wave of the vaccines to come in. And should you take it? I don't know.
Yeah, just Google that.
Or you know what? The other thing to do is to call your healthcare provider and ask, and they can give you know if you've been sick a lot or the scary thing to me behind all of this is long COVID, and they really don't know whether. There's a suspicion, actually, there are some indications that full vaccination means, it's not, as we all know, vaccines mean that if you do get COVID, you'll get a little bit less.
Yeah.
And there's a suspicion that it also will help against long COVID, and that's important to everyone. So
okay.
Where do you go?
All right. You'll have to decide yourself, listener.
Or talk to your doctor.
Talk to your doctor. Good advice. Another item, Amanda, you're reporting on the city of Seattle trying to electrify their vehicles. What's so hard about that?
Yeah, so the story should be coming out next week, actually.
But can you tell us now?
Yes. Well, I mean, it's all news that's out there, which is that they're trying out this new electric bike lane sweeper. I did not know that we needed special vehicles to sweep bike lanes specifically.
Oh.
But that's part of their goal to electrify their fleet. The main sort of roadblocks ahead is that, I think everyone knows our charging infrastructure just isn't there yet, and they're sort of wrestling with these questions of how they're going to scale that up. The other thing is like medium heavy duty vehicles, your trucks, your snowplows, those bucket trucks that fix our like electric lines. There's not really good electric versions of those yet. They're either too expensive or just, so early in their development.
Okay. Is there an app I can get that I can unlock one of these electric bike lane sweepers and ride that bad boy around the city?
Please.
Jane and I are into that.
I hear the peak speed is 21 miles per hour.
Or even if we can just make requests for where we want it to go.
Oh, yeah.
I have ridden through a lot of stuff in the bike lanes in the last few weeks here, and it's only going to get worse with all of the fall leaves.
Yeah, if you could call it up. Smart sweeper. Amanda, since we're talking about stuff you're working on, you wrote about a giant sturgeon.
Yes.
Great story.
Everyone just loves a big dead fish is what I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like super rare. Like, people are aware they exist in Lake Washington. It's just, they do live for like decades at a time and grow to be 8 to 10 feet long. And so when a dead one washes up every, couple of years, people are pretty excited about it.
Wow.
I am. You're out there and looking down and thinking, whoa.
Yeah,
that's
about as long as my paddleboard. It could hide. It could just like be hiding down there. Is it going to bite me?
No, they're bottom feeders.
Will it bite my bottom?
Maybe. I don't know. They like to hang out towards the bottom of the water. But they're also, something I learned is that they're really old species. Like, they've been around since the dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. So, they've just been quietly lurking at the bottom of Lake Washington, and I just didn't know until one died.
All right, groovy. Couple more items we're gonna discuss here. But I did see that even though it's going to rain on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, the city of Seattle's being asked to do something we haven't been asked to do in 8 years, which is to voluntarily cut back our water usage because it's been a dry summer and it's supposed to be a pretty dry autumn. So here's some things you can do.
Some easy tips. Stop watering your lawns indoors. Take shorter showers or take showers instead of baths. Run full loads of laundry instead of partial ones. Similarly for the dishwasher. And if you have a running toilet, fix the leak.
Alex Chen there, the agency's director of drinking water. One thing, I got one for you. Just turn on the tap. Get the soap in your hand when you're washing your hands. Then turn on the tap enough to wet the situation. And then turn off the tap. And then rub. And then turn the water back on. Because I stand next to people. Like, there's a lot of water coming out while they're washing their hands.
Toothbrushing. People do that. They turn on the water, start to brush their teeth. And if you're doing it right, you're doing it for 2 minutes.
Right.
Turn off the water.
Yeah. Is that scoldy or is that good tip, hot tip?
Seems smart. Saves money.
Thank you.
It's probably both, but in my head I'm like, okay, but everyone needs to stop watering their lawns
yes.
before I'm like counting the milliseconds.
I know what on my street does. And like, I'm walking the dog on my street, like all the little blocks around my house. And I'm like, so proud of these neighbors who don't water their lawns. Someone just got turf too. And I was like, you know, that's smart. Looks green all year.
Right.
Don't have to put any water on it. Don't have to weed. Yep. Anyway. Yeah.
But it doesn't eat up carbon dioxide though.
Yeah, there's definitely trade-offs, right? And then, like, producing the turf probably also requires resources, but...
Well, we're going to talk carbon dioxide in just a moment. Give me a few seconds to add my final rundown story item, which is another ferry out of service. Oh. Prop damage... Oh, I'm sorry, Joanne. Prop damage on the Walla Walla on the Seattle to Bremerton run put that boat out of service at least a month, and they shifted a Seattle Bainbridge boat to Bremerton, right?
Right. But so they did bring another boat in, but it's okay. A little guy.
Oh.
It doesn't take enough cars, and it's messed everything up.
Okay. How many ferries are still in service? Because it feels like it might be easier at this point to count that than the ones that are out of service. Because I feel like every few weeks I hear about another incident. And, I mean, we know that our fleet is aging, and it's, you know, this bigger infrastructure problem. So no hate to our ferries, love them very much, but
give
has
them
any more money? How many are still in versus out?
I think it's like around 20 that you know the, and they're only at 24, but I don't have the exact numbers, but
we should highlight the, every week, highlight still in service.
Yeah.
new boat of the week.
My
a hero
answer is just put more money into it. And I realize that, you know, with the eastern part of the state not really being into financing, this has been a problem, but it's really a problem.
Yeah. Oh, and there was a meeting last night or the night before at Vashon Island High School with the ferry officials and all that. So it's bad on Vashon, too, I could tell you.
Oh, it's worse for them. They don't have a bridge, at least Bainbridge. Yeah. We've got a bridge. You know, you can always, as they say, drive around. It's not convenient, but if you have to, you have to. But Vashon doesn't have that option.
Okay, so that's a rundown of the news of the week. And before we take a break, since we briefly mentioned carbon sequestration, we didn't say that, but doing the right thing environmentally, here's the good news. Air quality has improved since 2000 in Washington State and nationwide. Bad news, though, Jane, wildfire smoke has erased 75% of the progress we've made in Washington and all of the progress in Oregon of the last couple decades. That's according to new research in the journal Nature. What should our listeners know about our air?
Bad news indeed. I mean, I think the real take home for a lot of us is that we are still really figuring out like what wildfire smoke does to our health in the long term. Really it has only become a huge issue in the last few decades here, and researchers are just now kind of trying to gather that longitudinal data to figure out how that affects us in the long run. And I think we know in the short run already that it has all sorts of negative effects for pregnant women, people with asthma or COPD. So not surprising to learn that, but seeing those stats is pretty sobering.
It's scary because there is epidemiological data that links it to premature mortality, increased – I'm reading from a list from the California Air Resources Board. Premature mortality, increased hospital admissions for heart or lung causes, acute and chronic bronchitis, asthma, as you mentioned, ER visits, respiratory symptoms, and restricted activity days. All of those you can look at it number-wise and it goes up. And they do know that it causes inflammation within the body because it gets the finest particles actually get absorbed into the bloodstream so that they can go to other organs, not just the lungs. And that's terrifying.
Oof. Maybe I shouldn't have gone to Leavenworth last weekend and rode that roller coaster because it was this view of smoke. One more issue regarding fire and smoke is that it's gotten harder to insure your house against – is that specifically against fire? It's harder to get homeowners insurance because of increased fire risk. And some people are complaining to the state about losing coverage, and the state has said there's nothing we can do about it. What are we supposed to do about it? Can we force private insurance companies? I mean, if it's Bill's insurance company, I would like to know what the risk is of fire before I decide that I want to promise you I will pay you in the case of a fire. What are we supposed to do about that situation?
Right. They do. I mean, with earthquakes, you pay higher earthquake insurance. I don't even know if you can get earthquake insurance if you're out of the danger zone, but we all pay pretty high earthquake insurance here. So, yeah, what is it? The state of Oregon wants to block insurers from paying, from charging more. But that's what insurance is. It's a private.
If it's private insurance.
It's a private company. Right. Government insurance is different. But private insurance, they look and see what your risk is, and they price accordingly. They've been stopped from doing that with health insurance. And, of course, that means everybody's rates go up because that's what it takes. You know, if we're going to spread risk like that, then the rates go up. And I don't quite understand the business model for the – or what the state of Oregon is thinking in telling insurers, no, you can't consider the risk.
I think what states can do is set those standards at least so that insurance companies have to be more transparent about what criteria they're using to increase those premiums. Because I know that those fire maps that came out in Oregon, I believe last year, it was a whole controversy about, well, how accurate are these maps? Are they taking into account individual homeowners' improvements to their property?
And they should
Have a metal roof and cleared vegetation away out from near your home.
Yeah, they should have to take that into account. And also, you know, if you live in an area where there's good, you know, they're doing prescription burning and other things, if you're trying to make a difference, that should count for something. And I agree, the state should ask the insurer, tell the insurers, you know, you've got to consider. You've got to be accurate, and you've got to let people know, and you've got to consider what they've done.
Okay. Well, this situation is going to increase, right? I mean, there are some Washington zip codes I read, and I don't remember where I read it, that could see more than a 200% increase in the number of properties at risk of wildfire and of losing insurance coverage as a result. So we'll be hearing more about this.
Right, and then you can't get a mortgage. You know, if you can't get a house, if you can't get insurance, then nobody's going to give you a mortgage.
Yeah. But you're also less likely to build where you shouldn't build, right?
Well, that's a good thing.
I think the difficult issue here is, yes, more people are building out into what a lot of researchers call the wildland-urban interface. Sure, maybe this will dissuade new building, but there are tons of people who already live there. And for them, this has come as a complete surprise.
Yeah. That's true.
They can't sell their homes because people don't want to buy them if they can't insure what they've bought, which leaves them in a really difficult position if they are ever, you know, hit by a fire.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, why don't we take a break? And I can't promise we're not going to use the word fire, but we're going to combine it with works into a new word, and that'll still make people mad.
Yes,
we'll be right back on Week in Review. Your panel of local journalists helping you understand the week gone by: freelance science journalist Jane C. Hu, independent health journalist Joanne Silberner, Seattle Times climate and environment reporter Amanda Zoe. So last month, my daughter fell asleep on my side of the bed next to her mom, so I slept in her room, and at 11:30, I was suddenly awakened by a boom, and I thought, explosion. But then it had a regular cadence to it. Boom! But the sound would change a little, and I thought, construction? It's not that. Is it demolition? And then, because the whole vibe was weird, I'm waking up suddenly in a strange bed to weird sounds. You know, I'm not rational. I start thinking, are we under attack?
Yeah.
And so I check my phone, and a friend of mine's asking what's going on. I went to Twitter, where I couldn't at least quickly find discussion, so I went to Next Door. And you knew there was chatter there. If you give Next Door people something to actually complain about, wow. So it was a fireworks display, an 11:30 p.m. fireworks display in Lake Washington. Now, fireworks, the reason that didn't come to my mind, because I think fireworks should sound like, and then wait for it. You got the, yeah, that's fireworks, right? So, but I couldn't hear that part. I just heard the boom. I'll stop that. You get the idea. So there was what I found out is that there was an event in Seward Park in Seattle, and they had a permit, but there was a delay, and so they did the fireworks anyway, very late, and they apologized for it afterward. I tell you this now because fast forward to this week, Saturday night at 9:40 p.m., still 2.5 hours after the sun has set, the same thing happened, and it was heard from Bainbridge Island to Ballard. What's that sound? My kid thinks Russia is invading. It was another private fireworks show. The same pyrotechnics company that does the July 4th show at Gasworks, they got a permit from the Seattle Fire Department to load fireworks shells onto a barge in Seattle, in Ballard, and they tugged it off of Bainbridge, outside of Bainbridge's jurisdiction. The Coast Guard said, told the Seattle Times, that this company applied for a marine events permit, and the Coast Guard said, oh, you don't need that, because the event, quote, the event does not introduce any extra or unusual hazards that would jeopardize the safety of human life on the navigable waters for the United States.
On the navigable waters. That's yeah. very important.
Also, human life? What about marine life?
Ah, they didn't consider that.
Oh, good thought.
It's not the Marine Guard. Marine lifeguard. It is the Marine Guard. So the permit from Seattle Fire said that this private pyrotechnics company was hired by a mysterious company called WYBO that has been doing, it's not the first time they've done surprise fireworks shows. They've been doing it off and on since at least the 90s. And two of my three guests were disturbed.
Well, no, I was disturbed too.
Oh, you were too.
I didn't hear it. I'm just disturbed that it happened.
Oh, okay. But you were awakened, or at least maybe not awakened, but
I was
freaked
trying
out?
To read a book, and I heard this low rumble and spent like 10 minutes running around my house, kind of just trying to figure out what it was and where it was coming from. And at a certain point, I actually just had to say to myself, you know what? You're not going to find out. Just relax and
live in the mystery.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like there's an apparent answer that's going to be available to you immediately, so just accept.
I can't remember what I was doing, but I had the same experience where I like heard it, and then like 5 minutes later I was like, well, this is still going, and I just felt like I was just going crazy. I was like, it really sounded like to me like when you hear thunder from a distance.
Yes.
Except that it was going on forever. Mm-hmm. And then being the reporter that I am, I called our regular source at the Seattle Times, the National Weather Service, because I know there's always someone on call who's like literally there to pick up the phone.
Whoa.
And I called them and I was like, I don't know if you guys are the right people to answer this, but I feel like I'm going crazy. I feel like I hear thunder. And they were like, well, there's no thunder in the area, but I'm seeing a tweet online that there is a private fireworks show. But I was going crazy. Like, I literally thought, I was like, is my neighbor like doing laundry, or, you know, but I'm like hearing it outside. I was going crazy.
How mad is the National Weather Service at you right now that you just outed them? Okay, don't call 911, but...
But, you know, on Bainbridge, what a lot of people were thinking was either Bremerton or Whidbey. There are two naval bases are there. You know, we've got a lot of things around that are capable themselves of making noise and that are also targets for attack. So
that's true.
Really,
that's freaking
scary.
Yeah, yeah. So we asked listeners for some reaction to this. And so Eric in West Seattle, who calls himself a proud buzzkill, Eric says, considering how hard this region's been hit with smoke from wildfires, I struggle to understand why fireworks are still a thing. There are other ways for the wealthy to show off during their private parties. The loud noises are not only disruptive, they're upsetting to animals, both in water and on land. The sound can trigger PTSD in humans. The smoke remnants make breathing difficult for those with health conditions. All it takes is one spark to decimate an area and impact the already endangered ecosystem, especially as climate change is hiking temperatures and leading to drier summers.
Yes.
Eric, you got it.
You got it.
Yeah, us fellow buzzkills.
However, then let me introduce Jason here in Burien, who says there's so little novelty and spontaneity left in our modern life. I say we take a breath, snuggle our pets, and let the rest of your community come together and ignite some small bombs in the night sky.
Except it wasn't for all of us. It was for a private event, which, I mean, I have yet to hear from anyone who actually got to enjoy the fireworks part of it rather than just the anxiety provoked by the either identifiable noise of explosion or the unidentifiable noise of, like, low rumble.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that nobody's coming out to say that I did it and it's a gift, or to tell us, you know, this is the second time, or to tell us beforehand that it happens, suggests to me that they recognize that this is not a popular thing.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about their us not knowing who these fireworks hirers are, because on the one hand, I guess they get to be private, you know. On the
it's not
private. And if they were public, to what purpose? So that people could shower indignation and resentment upon them. But it would feel good if you feel indignation and resentment. You at least know who to. So, and here, okay, how about this? Here's Maggie in the Central District, being central here, playing the middle. Maggie says, it's the surprise part that one should consider. Let your neighbors have the chance to leave that evening to avoid the noise. But when it's so loud as to go beyond the island for a private event, that's just rich folks showing off, putting their flash and smoke literally in your face.
Yeah, angry.
I will say I do enjoy fireworks.
Okay,
I recognize that there are externalities with that. But I guess the thing that I thought while this was happening is that I really do think sound pollution is like something we should consider more when it comes to these kind of events.
What do you mean by sound pollution?
Well, just that like it's hard to live your life if you like hear, you know, rumbling going on. And, you know, people who live near the airport, they say like that's a problem. People on Whidbey, they say it's a problem with the naval base. Mm-hmm. And it does seem like that should be part of the equation when people decide to do these things.
It makes it public rather than private.
I'm getting a text here regarding sound pollution. Oh, this is from a whale in the Salish Sea. Yes, sound pollution is a real thing. Please stop going around in motorboats to look at us. I appreciate it. Blah 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 blah. Yeah. So that's just a whale weighing in, you know, with that perspective. Yeah, sound pollution is a real deal.
Yeah.
Right, if this private party planner is listening, I hope they are taking some of these statements to heart and thinking about the impact of it. Although, so, I mean, I remember something very similar happening almost at the same time last year. In fact, I think initially the explanation that I saw being put forth in a lot of, not Nextdoor, but like Facebook, neighborhood groups on Facebook, was a Seattle Times article from last year at almost the exact same time explaining that the noise that you heard was a private party. So, yeah, the fact that it's happened at least 2 years in a row is
I would like to hear from this. Yes, I'd like to interview the sponsoring company, because maybe they feel like they're Willy Wonka bringing joy, bringing the golden ticket to the chocolate bars, you know? So tell me your side of the story. And you can, here's one way for you to be like Eric the Buzzkill and Jason and Maggie, is to sign up for our feedback line, kuow.org/feedback, or you can text us. Here's the number. 206-926-9955. Just text the word club. It's our feedback club. 206-926-9955. Okay, it's end of the show time. Maybe you smiled at fireworks. Amanda at least sometimes smiles at fireworks. Did anything that happened this week actually make you feel happy or hopeful?
Oh, did anything actually make me feel happy or hopeful? Great question. I think I'm going to go with the, you know, cliche, which is I like the cold weather.
You appreciate that.
Yeah, I
the
love
spiders. The
spiders.
Fleece.
Spiders are like absolutely the death of me.
My bad.
But the cold weather is great. I like putting on my pants for the first time in a bunch of months. I like eating ice cream when it's cold, which I guess other people don't agree with.
Oh, why especially when it's cold?
I just feel like it's cozy, and also it doesn't melt as fast. I feel like that's how you're supposed to eat ice cream, honestly.
In a fridge.
Yeah,
that's a good call. That's a good call, actually. Yeah, anyone else smiling?
Last night, I tried to go see Fantasy A Gets a Mattress at Grand Illusion
sold
Theater.
Out.
It was sold out.
I tried.
And the line to get last minute, you know, just at the door tickets wrapped around the block. Fantasy A was there taking pictures with fans.
A rapper, by the way.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. I had no idea.
It was just great to see so many people excited about a local production
a
at a local theater.
Yep.
about a local rapper and just felt very Seattle and brought a smile to my face.
I agree. It's coming to Central Cinema. They keep doing these showings, and I think I already got my ticket for a Central Cinema showing. So nice. Yeah, Fantasy A gets a mattress. It's getting all this. It's just, you know, indie. Anyway, it's a movie. Check it out if you're interested. Joanne, for me, I'm going
with the weather too. The other morning when we had rain. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember this. It just, it felt reassuring. And I'm not saying that I'm into the, you know, the 6 months of rain coming up, but that one morning of rain made me happy. And actually now knowing that Seattle is a little bit water, missing a
challenged.
Little bit of water. Yeah, yes. Water challenge. That's a good way to put it. Makes me even happier to have seen it.
Well, speaking of wet, that also stands for Washington Ensemble Theater. And so I'll just tell you that I went and saw a play at 12th Avenue Arts last night called Dream House, about these sisters who are selling their sort of ancestral home in a gentrified neighborhood. And they feel conflicted and disagree. And it's they choose a reality TV show called Flip It and List It. And anyway, it's really good. So there's good shows and entertainment. And Light Rail is back on schedule. That's making me happy.
Great.
I hope something's making you happy. I love that I get to come together with all of you. That makes me happy. Freelance science journalist Jane C. Hu, independent health journalist Joanne Silberner, Seattle Times climate and environment reporter Amanda Zoe. Thank you so much for doing the show this week.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you for tuning in. And I want to thank, all as always, Kevin Kniestad, producer of this show. We've got Kevin Deers running the board today. And finally, we have, if you're worried about political divides and want to be part of the solution, join in our One Small Step program. It's from StoryCorps. They're pairing strangers with different political views for a conversation, not about politics, just about your lives. So that's called One Small Step, and you can get information and sign up at kuow.org/story, as in StoryCorps. kuow.org/story. Thanks for tuning in, and let's do it all again a week from now.